in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
Hello, my name is Mark, and I am talking to Gino Cuddy. How are you, Gino?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You brought up, you're into a lot of older media. That's what I really like about your taste. You really touch upon a lot of stuff that actually falls in into the public domain. And you mentioned a long time ago about a comedy team that I was not familiar of, Wheeler and Woolsey. And I really never heard of them. And I kind of consider myself a little bit of a, I guess, a follower of higher comedy. I'm a big fan of the Marx Brothers, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, Fatty Arbuckle. But for whatever reason, Wheeler and Woolsey did not fall into this category when I was, I guess, seeking out different, you know, shows. And I'm still not sure why, except it was just, you know, a lack of my own type of research. So how long, what turned you on to Wheeler and Woolsey, or Woolsey and Wheeler?
Well, first of all, I want to, you know, briefly explain why you probably never heard of them. And that being the fact that Wheeler and Woolsey were a pre-code comedy team, meaning that they made their films before the initiation of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors Code of America, meaning that there could no longer be any instances of sex or allusions to sex, double entendres, risque humor, scantily clad women, violence of any kind, drug use, and a lot of the early Wheeler and Woolsey comedies dealt with that. They were actually known as the dirtiest of the pre-code comedians, and so that was one of the reasons why you probably haven't heard of them, is because their films weren't reran on television in the 50s and so on, like the Three Stooges films were, or the Laurel and Hardy films were, or even the Marx Brothers films were, because they were, to a certain extent, you know, aimed towards the kiddie market. They were aimed towards an adult market as well. But the thing with the Marx Brothers films that were produced in the pre-code era, at least, they were their edited forms, meaning they weren't the original theatrical cuts. They were reissued versions issued later on. Like, for instance, the version of Horse Feathers that survives today is a 1934 or 1936 reissue print. The original version sadly no longer exists. So that's one reason, because their films were deemed too tasteless to show on television in the 50s. Another reason is because they rarely made short two-reelers like the Three Stooges did and Laurel and Hardy did. And as far as I know, the only shorts that they made, there are three of them, a short called Signing on 'em Up from 1933, an all-star vehicle for Chesterfield Cigarettes called The Stolen Jewels from, I believe, 1931. And their own starring short film, O.O. Cleopatra, from 1933, which, as of this recording, still has not surfaced yet.
Really?
Correct.
So that's interesting what you're saying about the different prints and the different cuts that survived. Now, when you're talking about a classic like Duck Soup, that was, as far as I know, the theatrical release, what is in existence. But you're saying that, I mean, is that not true?
Well, to a certain extent it is, and to a certain extent it isn't. I mean, You know, the thing is, it was by film basis. You have to look at it like that because, you know, some films were edited more than others. Like, you know, again, if you see Horse Feathers, the scene with the college widow and the Marxes is all but gone. If you watch the modern day version, it just cuts and cuts and cuts and cuts, and it's so abrupt, you know, it's like Whiplash almost.
Right.
And that's all the various cuts and everything else. And let me give you a for instance. In the Marx Brothers film Animal Crackers, and this was recently restored, by the way, on the new Blu-ray sets, there was a line from the song Hooray for Captain Spaulding. Song by Groucho Marx that was cut out. After Margaret Dumont sings, "He's the only white man to cover every acre," Groucho in the original 1930 print said, "I think I'll try to make her," which, when speaking in 30s terms, making her is the equivalent of having sex or making love.
Sure.
Or having an affair, if you will. And so that line was often snipped out in reissues and was only recently rediscovered and put back into the film. So for years, that's the only way you could have seen that film was with that part cut out, certain other parts cut out. So, in essence, many of the Marx Brothers films that you saw, I don't know too much about Duck Soup, and there's a Duck Soup connection to the film we're reviewing tonight, by the way, later on.
Yeah, I learned about that.
And so, Duck Soup, I'm not sure there was much edited out. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the version that we have today is the de facto theatrical version. Again, it's like a film-by-film basis. It's like, you want to talk about films that were really edited down, the film A Night at the Opera that they did in 1935, a lot of that stuff was edited down severely. If you notice at the start of the film, it starts rather abruptly. There's no fade-in or establishing shot. That's because there was a lot of shots of Italy, Italians, and it was like lavish musical numbers at the beginning of that film.
They just removed it.
Yeah, because during World War II, the Italians were our enemy, and
yeah,
they figured that we shouldn't be seeing Italians on the screen, which, of course, knowing Chico's character, kind of, you know, contradicts that.
Right, it's completely idiotic.
Correct.
So with Wheeler and Woolsey, it is a very kind of interesting thing, because this is a very risque film in comparison to Duck Soup or anything. You know, there's a scene where he goes and tips the girl by throwing her a coin and it goes down her top.
Yes, yes.
I love
that scene.
Yeah, this is also a beautifully filmed movie. It's a very Hollywood feel. You know, it's a very clean print. The sets and the costume design is all, I think it all looks great. You know, there's no question that, you know, there were a few dollars put into this movie. Unfortunately, it didn't do very well. Well, it did okay, actually, right? In the,
yes,
in the box,
yes,
office. It made,
yes,
something like $8,000.
Correct. Most of the Wheeler and Woolsey films up to this point did very well. As a matter of fact, a lot of them saved the studio from bankruptcy. 1931's Caught Plastered, for instance, was RKO Radio Pictures' biggest moneymaker. And it's interesting to note just how many films Wheeler and Woolsey put out over their short career. If you don't mind, short, like, little history lesson.
Sure.
They started out as a comedy team in the film Rio Rita as backup players. And RKO loved the play and the boys so much that they wound up getting their own contract. So they wound up making the film version of Rio Rita in 1929, which was actually one of RKO's earliest films. RKO really got started really late in the film industry. They got started in and around 1927 with a film by the name, I believe, of Syncopation. And so Wheeler and Woolsey get a contract. Their first legit film as a team was 1930's The Cuckoos, which was actually an adaptation of the Clark and McCullough play, The Ramblers. Now, Clark and McCullough being Bobby Clark and Paul McCullough, another obscure comedy team that I just love with a passion, and whose tenure ended sadly with the suicide of Paul McCullough in 1936. So, just to put it into perspective, in 1931, Wheeler and Woolsey made no less than 5 feature films.
Really?
Yeah. I guess you could divvy them up because RKO tried an experiment, but they failed miserably at it. They tried putting the boys into their own film, splitting them up, but neither film did well. Too Many Cooks failed at the box office, and that was Burt Wheeler's solo film, and Robert Woolsey's solo film, Everything's Rosie, didn't do well either. An interesting side note about Everything's Rosie, it's often looked at as an adaptation of the W.C. Fields play Poppy, in which Robert Woolsey had a starring role in the stage version back in the early 20s. And then soon after that, they came back together as a team. They made a film by the name of Cracked Nuts in 1931, which starred Boris Karloff, and I believe his last role before going to Universal to play the infamous Frankenstein's monster in the famous, James Whale film. So it's quite cool to see Boris Karloff before Frankenstein. And also within that film is an early version of the Abbott Costello Who's on First routine. Most interesting, it's one of the first comedies in the sound era to be set in a fictional kingdom. It's tempting to speculate, since the title of the film is Crack Nuts, if it didn't inspire the writers at Paramount to make Duck Soup, whose, of course, original title was Cracked Ice. That wasn't the only political satire that Wheeler and Woolsey did either. There is a wonderful film that they did in 1933 called Diplomaniacs, which is quite a surreal experience. I believe more off the wall than the Marx Brothers' own Duck Soup. Highly recommended viewing.
And when I watched this, I did find their type of humor to be a little bit pandering, a little bit gimmicky. I didn't really, I still don't like Wheeler. I think that Woolsey paved the way for a number of comedians later on, like George Burns, I think, found a certain style in him. And this is just my own personal opinion. But
I think Phil Silvers even might have taken a little bit from Woolsey because I see a lot of Woolsey and Phil Silvers, especially when Phil Silvers was doing the Sergeant Bilko show in the 50s.
Now, and also Woolsey had a type of signature singing or sound, which, could you do it for us?
Whoa!
I found it so annoying at first. And then I was like expecting him to do it. And I'm like, why isn't he doing it? And then I'm like all of a sudden a fan of it. So, towards the end of the movie, he's doing it like a madman. I'm like, oh, that's what I wanted. I wanted to hear him do this. And what happened? I became a minor fan at this point of this comedy team. I still think Wheeler is the weak one of the two. The banana gimmick I thought was kind of silly. You know what? We didn't even mention the exact movie we're doing, which is Hips Hips Hooray from 1934.
Hips Hips Hooray from 1934, correct.
Now, does Wheeler do the banana bit in every single movie?
No. That was like something exclusive to his character in this film.
I felt like it was funny in one scene, and that's when there's a car chase, and he throws the banana in a peel, and they go slip sliding. That was clever. It was cute. But this was a very strange hour movie. There were high points and low points. The music numbers, I was very on the fence with. I am, I was not a fan of pretty much any of the movies. I mean, any of the songs, except behind the title. Hold on. Give me a second here. Just Keep On Doing What You're Doing is actually a pretty good song.
Correct. And interesting side note, that song was originally meant for Zeppo Marx to sing to Raquel Torres' character in the film Duck Soup, but it was cut out prior to the preview.
Now, one thing I want to try to dig up is to see if that exists anywhere. You know, a version of them singing it that I would be interested in listening to.
Well, there's a lot of cutting room floor material of Duck Soup in an old radio broadcast that I heard like years and years ago, but I can't seem to find anymore. Mm-hmm. Sadly. It was Paramount on the air, and they used to preview their films, and they used to air bits from them. I often wonder if RKO did the same thing with the Wheeler and Woolsey films. It's often tempting to want to hear what was left out, because there was actually some stuff cut out of Wheeler and Woolsey films. So This Is Africa is probably the most prominent of that. There's a lot cut out of So This Is Africa, a lot of risque material. And that was just in the writing process. In the film process, it was cut down even more. And so the version of So This Is Africa that survives today is really a watered-down version of what it once was.
Mm-hmm.
And also cut out, quite famously, in their 1932 film Peach O'Reno. No, I believe that was 1931, correction. There was a wrestling scene between Robert Woolsey and Zelma O'Neill that was cut out. That's why there's a scene in there when you see Woolsey and Zelma come out and they're all frazzled. Their films, you asked me earlier, how did I get into them? Let me explain
well,
that.
Well, let's start reviewing the actual movie at this point, because we really don't want to give an entire history lesson on this comedy team. I mean, this is something that, you know, people, if they enjoy this, they can really kind of look into it a bit themselves. But I'd really like to play some of these clips and actually get through, you know, get people to actually go and dig around and find this movie, which is not that easy to find.
Correct.
Where would somebody find Hip Hip? Hips, Hips, Hooray, now.
Well, the thing is, I do have to give a nice big shout-out to the wonderful people over at Warner Archive Collection. They have been doing God's work with these films. Warner Archive being the made-on-demand DVD and Blu-ray arm of the Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, and Warner Brothers, of course, owns the copyrights to pretty much all RKO Radio Picture productions. And so in around 2013, they put out a wonderful 9-film collection of Wheeler and Woolsey films called the Wheeler and Woolsey RKO Comedy Classics Collection. It had 9 films, some of their greatest films. I do take issue with the fact that a lot of their films weren't released in chronological order. Like, for instance, there's like... for instance, Diplomaniacs was made in 1933, but yet the 9 film set has films spanning from 1930 all the way until 1937. So if you're a purist and you want to keep these in chronological order, it is a bit difficult. But that is just a minor complaint. Everything else is impeccable. The sound is wonderful. The picture is marvelous. So Hips, Hips, Hooray can be found on that 9-film collection.
Awesome.
And if you are interested in other Wheeler and Woolsey films, they have released the entire RKO catalog.
All right, great. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I'm going to play a clip now of the Wheeler and Woolsey introduction, where they're on the street selling flavored lipstick. Ridiculous. All right, here we go. Listen in.
Folks, you are listening to Dr. Deadly, the one and only Dr. Deadly. Now then, neighbors. That'll be all of that, McNitwit.
change her clothes and mingle with the crowd.
Right.
Now then, folks, I am offering Dr. Dudley's flavored lipsticks. Think of it, folks, flavored lipsticks. These sticks come in all sorts of flavors. Peach for your sweetheart, orange for your wife, and raspberry for your mother-in-law.
So across the street, they're across the street from a type of Macy's type of glamour window where a woman is sitting in the window putting on makeup and all these men are basically watching in the... And the woman, of course, is in the hopes that the men are going to say, well, I want my wife to have that beautiful, you know, succulent color, so I'm going to buy up some. Problem is that the... I forget the characters' names, but Wheeler and Woolsey basically set up a much cheaper flavored lipstick stand across the street, and the men go to where the bargain is and where the loud guy yelling is. And that's essentially what the premise of this is. They're not con men, really. They're just, what would you call them? They're just guys trying to make some money.
There is a term for them, although it's escaping me right now. Panhandling, perhaps?
Yeah, they're hawking, you know, like they're, yeah, not really panhandling because they're not begging, but they're basically selling
the permit.
So the woman comes, you know, she basically finds out that they're across the street and she's amazed that they sold all of this makeup. And she tells, I believe it's Wheeler, right? Wheeler to go and sell her makeup.
Correct.
You know, here, sell all this, you know, because she's beautiful and he's enamored. So he's like, oh, of course I'll do it. They bring it over there and the heat shows up, the fuzz, the cop. And they say, well, we're not doing anything wrong. We're giving this away. So the cop says, all right, let me see, give it away then. So they give away the woman's makeup for free to everyone, the expensive stuff. And the woman is amazed, and this is where it doesn't make any sense. They don't pay her for the goods, but for whatever reason, she's totally impressed. And she's convinced that they're millionaires, and they're... Like, what would you even say at this point? Like, that she wants to meet with them and take, you know, get into business with them because they're such good business people, but they haven't shown her one nickel. So it's ridiculous.
Well, if you remember in the scene.
Oh, right. They did show. I'm sorry. They did pay for the makeup. I apologize.
Yes.
With every dime that they had in their pockets, they almost spent every single dime on in their pockets.
Correct.
I'm sorry about that. He spent, I believe it was $24.
Not bad for 1934.
No, not for like an arm full of toiletries. So the next day, you fast forward and they're waking up. I think that this happens to be one of the two funniest scenes in the movie. And they basically sleep in the car. And the car is like a Model A... something or another. Yeah, like a Ford Model A. And it has like every little Inspector Gadget type of accoutrement. They start the car to heat up the radiator, which creates a percolating coffee machine. They grind the front where you would normally have to jump start the car to grind the coffee beans. But the problem is at this point, this is where Woolsey was getting on my nerves. Woolsey's the one with glasses, right?
Yes.
His cadence, the way he speaks, I personally hate it so much. But again, I did laugh quite a few times, and this team kind of grew on me. At least he did.
Yes. I mean, the thing that's been thrown around about Wheeler and Woolsey is... that they are an acquired taste. And I agree with some of that to a certain extent. But, however, I do think that if you do like the Marx Brothers, you are going to like Wheeler and Woolsey, because a lot of the same people who worked on Marx Brothers films worked on Wheeler and Woolsey films as well. If you take note in the cast and crew list, you would see the names of Burt Calamar and Harry Ruby. They were marvelous songwriters and screenwriters, and they wrote some of the best Marx Brothers songs. They wrote Hooray for Captain Spaulding, These Are the Laws of My Administration, a lot of the classic Marx Brothers songs. So they wrote a lot of songs in this. And also, there is Thelma Todd's character. She also appeared. Thelma Todd was a comedian. A beautiful comedian.
Well, here's the thing. The women in this movie, I will say this about this comedy team, is they choose much better-looking women than the Marx Brothers did.
Yes.
The Marx Brothers absolutely had... Whenever there was the evil woman, that was the beautiful woman. But when, you know, they would also choose, like, the straight women, or, you know... But in this movie, every woman in the entire movie is good-looking.
Correct. And Thelma Todd, she actually sadly met a tragic end. She wound up dying of carbon monoxide poisoning in 1935. She was only in her 20s.
Wow.
Some people speculate that the reason for that is because she had rather a disastrous relationship with some rather unscrupulous mafia men.
Wow.
What's even more eerie about that is Groucho Marx himself foretold her death in the film Monkey Business, where he says, "You're a woman who's got nothing but dirty brakes. Well, we could clean and tighten up your brakes, but you'll have to stay out in the garage all night."
Yeah, that's...
So Thelma Todd starred with the Marx Brothers in Monkey Business and Horse Feathers, replacing Margaret Dumont, who was their de facto straight woman throughout their career.
Sure.
Thelma Todd was also starred in a lot of Laurel Hardy films, and she even had her own series of comedies with fellow comedian Zazu Pitts.
Hmm.
She was referred to in the business as Hot Toddy, because she was a beautiful, ravishing firecracker of a woman, people loved working with her. They even made a TV movie about her in the mid-80s.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. You have to, like, dig up some links for me so I can put them in the show notes after that.
Will do, sir.
So we do have another, couple clips here that you sent over. Do you want me to play some?
Go right ahead, sir.
Should I just play it in order, or?
Yes.
Tell Dave we got big...
What? All
right. And we could talk about them as well.
Sure.
Big offices for.
We got a chance of getting ourselves in on this Frisbee proposition, and there's nothing like a big office to impress a woman. Now, here are the lipsticks, and this is our future headquarters.
But suppose something goes wrong.
It can't go wrong. All you've got to do is to give me 5 minutes alone with the guy that owns these offices. Then you get him on the phone and tell him something to get him out of there. Tell him some bad news.
I'll tell him his wife ran away.
That's not bad news.
Yeah, I mean, they have a couple, like, cute, like, one-liners like that that land very well. They go in there and they tell this business person his house is on fire. And he, of course, leaves the business like a maniac.
My goldfish!
Yeah, and Woolsey goes in there and makes believe it's his office so that this, makeup girl can come up and be impressed that he is $2 million.
Now, it is worth mentioning the makeup girl that we were referring to is Dorothy Lee. She was a beautiful actress, a pinup model back in the early 30s, and she was Wheeler and Woolsey's most consistent co-star, appearing in most of their films.
Oh, really?
There was a marvelous book written about her back in the day called Dorothy Lee, The Life and Times of the Wheeler and Woolsey Girl. After the Wheeler and Woolsey films, she never acted on screen again, sadly. But she did keep friends with Burt Wheeler. Robert Woolsey sadly died in 1938. He was only 49 years old.
Yeah, he died of kidney disease, right?
Correct. And so Dorothy Lee and Bert Wheeler wound up going out on stage and going out on tour together in the 40s. What happened to the relationship after that, I am unaware. But Dorothy Lee died at some point in and around the 1990s.
I see. You know, another thing that's interesting is Woolsey, you know, was born in 1888. You know, that's crazy, you know, when you really think about it. You know, the amount of technology that the guy lived through, even though he did die young, you know, it's really an incredible existence.
Yes. And the thing about Woolsey is he's incredibly gaunt and thin, and his body and everything, it's quite hilarious when you think about it. But the reason why he's so fit and trim is because Woolsey was originally a jockey. But the thing is, he wound up getting into a bad accident with a horse, and he wound up having to give up on that life, and he wound up going out on the stage much, much later.
Yeah.
So he always kept himself fit and trim, though. Always kept fit and trim. Interesting. That was his lifestyle.
Well, after they get into the office, I'm going to play that clip. It's called The Office Invasion.
It's long enough. I'll tell him myself.
Wait, you can't go in there.
Mr. Clark, you don't remember me, but I met you in Deauville in the spring of 31.
I was in Paris in the spring of 31.
So was I. I just wanted to see how good your memory was.
See here, I don't know you, and I have no time for guessing games.
Okay, if you feel that way, I'll take my $100,000 and go someplace else.
Just a minute. I'm very sorry, I didn't know. Did you wish to make an investment?
What else would I be doing here? When you want a hot dog, you go to a hot dog stand, don't you?
Why, yes.
Well, cut it out. Those hot dogs will kill you.
And, you know, he's very, you know, forward-thinking about nitrites, you know, nitrates. I guess, you know, eating hot dogs has always been, like, kind of a joke, right?
Yes, it has been. And it must have been. I think Woolsey's particular joke here was really, really well delivered.
Yeah, I mean, the timing is very good very often. I can't get past his glasses. I think they're silly. But, you know, he does deliver a line fairly well. I also wanted to mention that during the song Keep On Doing What You're Doing, which they actually sing more than once, Dorothy Lee is dropped on her back, and although she carries on and finishes the number, she had just, you know, that was an injury to her spine that left her in pain for the rest of her life.
Correct.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So should I keep going with these clips?
Yes, please.
All right. Give me a sec here.
Hello? Speaking. It's the president of the bank. I don't think my partner will consider it. Would you consider it?
Consider what?
Nope, he won't consider it. That's the fifth time he's called me up today. Why, the offer is ridiculous for a business like ours.
Why, you're not thinking of selling the business. Why, that's what I came here to talk to you about. I thought perhaps we could get together on a proposition.
Even the way she's twisting her hips and everything is so suggestive and so not something that you normally see in these movies.
Correct.
It's really crazy.
Well, I'm awfully glad that you came up to see me. Your idea of getting together on a proposition interests me. Oh. What night have you got open?
Oh,
darling. The cute.
And
you know, of course, that line that Woolsey said was a nod to the famous, "Why don't you come up and see me sing sometime," from Mae West.
Sure. And, you know, it was almost like he was goofing on her in a lot of ways, but not. So here's the infamous Keep On Doing What You're Doing, which I'm going to guess the Marx Brothers did better. But this is a very good song, and it's...
I think Bert and Dottie perform it quite well.
Wheeler's just not my favorite. I could do without him. Sorry.
Maybe you don't realize what you've done to me. You've made me your slave. You're what I crave constantly. When I see your smiling eyes and behold your charms, it's heaven to me. I wanna be in your arms.
Just keep on doing what you're doing, although it's leading me to ruin. Just keep on doing what you're doing, 'cause I love what you're doing to me. Just keep on doing what you're doing, although I know there's trouble brewing. Just keep on doing what you're doing, 'cause I love what you're doing to me.
Your lips as red as wine, our lips I can't resist. And once they're pressed to mine, I'll wanna be kissed and kissed.
Just keep on doing what you're doing, although it's leading me to ruin. Just keep on doing what you're doing, 'cause I love what you're doing to me.
It was great phrasing in that song. It's a good song.
Yes.
You don't usually find songs like this anymore at all, even in musicals.
Sadly, no. And again, I do have to say that that's because of the awesome writing power of Burt Calamari and Harry Ruby. They really knew how to write songs. They really knew how to create melodies. And if you watch a Marx Brothers film, you'd know that. And especially Wheeler and Woolsey films, I do have to say that the songwriting is top notch, if not most of them.
Mm-hmm. So here's the dictation scene. Of course, they play on the word dictation. I think you have to.
Correct.
No matter what, I think if the word dictation is in the movie, you have to play on it. No matter what. Just, it's part of it.
Yes.
Take this letter.
And, you know, in a very Groucho Marx way. And, you know, I hate to compare people to Groucho Marx because it's clear that these guys were definitely talented. And they deserve to not be compared to the Marx Brothers every time, you know, they do something. But this was the Marx Brothers character. Like this, he was totally presumptuous and he would just sit in the woman's lap. You know, it's just something that you don't see very many characters even being able to pull off. And Groucho Marx just comes to mind immediately.
Yes.
Pardon me, that was the other girl. Take this letter to the President of the United States. My dear President, read that back.
My dear President.
That's not right. Take out dear. Now what have you got?
My President.
Not right yet. Take out present and put back dear. Now what have you got?
My dear.
That's no way to address a president. Put back president. Now how does it sound?
My dear president.
That's got it. That's what I wanted in the first place. Get that out and set it off immediately.
But you haven't told him anything.
Why should I tell him anything? He's a president. Oh, by the way, have the girls come in. I wish to do a little demonstrating.
Yes, sir.
Better get that letter off airmail. There's the money.
So he tossed her a coin, which went down her very low-cut dress.
Correct.
And that's where you got the ching-ching, which was hilarious. There were a lot of things about this scene which I thought were spot on. It was perfect. You know, this scene, if they could have just made a whole movie with this kind of, you know, really tight humor. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that one of the better parts of the scene is the lack of Wheeler. I think that Woolsey was very good on his own. I don't think he needed a sidekick. You know, he didn't need to be a part of a comedy team. I think Woolsey could definitely carry a scene on his own, which is something he just proved. And I know that you're a fan of the team. I'm just simply saying that something about Wheeler I don't like.
Well, I've always been more of a Woolsey fan than a Wheeler fan, but I've always loved what Bert added to the productions. I mean, Bert was a very talented man. I'm honored to be friends with Bert Wheeler's granddaughter, Bonnie LaBarber. Mm-hmm. Very, very beautiful woman inside and out. And he was a talented guy. I mean, even after Woolsey died, he wound up doing a lot of television work, a lot of theatrical work. His penultimate role was as Smokey Joe in the TV Western Brave Eagle in the 50s.
Yeah, I noticed that on IMDb. You know, I guess my main problem is these guys are funny on their own. And I think that when they're together, they clash a little bit. And maybe that's it. I think that Wheeler's singing was great in the Keep On Doing What You're Doing. I did enjoy him in that scene dramatically. It's weird. When these guys are without each other, I like them a lot more. The scene where Wheeler goes and meets the girl outside of the, earlier in the film. You know, I like, now that I think about it, I like that Wheeler a little bit more. He's more of the handsome younger one. And that I enjoyed. But once they're together, outside of the scene with the car, there's something about it that just rubs me the wrong way. And, you know, I don't mean to attack Wheeler, because now I'm thinking about it individually, I think he's good. He's kind of the straight man. I think he took a little too many, pot shots. You know, like, he's definitely, the banana thing I just didn't like.
Well, again, he doesn't do that. And I think, you know, in order for them to, as a team, to really grow on you, you would have to see more of their films. And
I agree with you.
And I don't know how you'd feel about this, but I don't know if you'd be comfortable doing more of their films on VHS Rewind.
Yeah, I mean, let's see how this goes. And, you know, there's 100 billion other movies. I don't want to just stick to this. I mean, again, this is the first one I've seen. I don't want to commit to anything.
Correct.
But here's a scene which you could make if it was in a movie that was easily rated R or PG-13. This would not be in a rated PG movie. And it's the lipstick taste test. This, I maybe you couldn't even make this scene anymore because it's such... You just couldn't make this scene. I'm going to play it.
All right, let's get out of the business. Now, girls, are you all ready for the test?
Yes, Doctor.
What's the idea?
Listen, boy, you're going to love this. It's a new guessing game. The girls put on the lipsticks, and we guess the flavor. Is that an idea?
Idea? It's an inspiration.
Hey, wait a minute. It's my idea, you know.
Now, they're also wearing, like, nothing. They're wearing a scarf that's, it's like a real showgirl's outfit. They're all wearing garters and stockings and heels and very high-cut pants, shorts, and they're barely covered. I mean, you don't normally see this type of clad female in a 1930s movie at all. Right? I mean, this isn't something you normally see.
Well, in pre-code cinema, that was all over the place.
But this was probably cut out very quickly after, you know, the code had been floated. This scene just wouldn't float. It would just be cut out completely, right?
Definitely. If there's anything to be said for Hips, Hips, Hooray, it does contain a lot of the hallmarks of what made the pre-code era what it was.
So here's the rest of that scene.
Well, I'm just developing it.
You want me first?
Not yet, honey, not yet. You'll have to take your turn. I know how you feel, but it can't be helped. Watch the old master now. At ease. Tucker. I think it's lemon.
Me?
Not yet.
Isn't she cute? She can't wait. You're next.
Now, in order to save a lot of time, we'll both kiss her and then guess. Lavender and old lace.
And they kissed each other.
And what's interesting is
that...
We haven't
had such flavor as that.
Sorry.
What's interesting about that part was that girl that they were supposed to kiss and they wound up kissing each other, that girl was actually Burt Wheeler's actual real-life girlfriend at the time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, this next one, I'm just going to bring it back a few... a second or two here. This is probably the funniest line in the movie.
We haven't any such flavor as that. Young lady, you keep out of those Italian restaurants.
That's great. Excellent. And she actually was very good looking. She's going to be the cover of this particular episode. I took a screenshot.
Come here, Toots.
Even that wouldn't make it to a movie. Toots?
Yep.
You know, this is becoming irksome.
Well, come on, say something.
Hello?
Are you ready for me now?
Am I ready for you, baby?
And she picks him up and his legs are straight as a board.
Like an erection joke.
Right.
Public enemy, number one.
So, you know, I don't know. It's definitely scenes like that are great. You know, they're really, really interesting. They're glimpses into the way Hollywood was really thinking. I think scenes like that are very important. Without a doubt. So I'm going to jump on to the next scene, which is Backfield in Motion.
Ah, yes. I love this scene.
Should be penalized 5 yards.
What for?
Backfield in motion.
Hey, another thing. I just noticed this. There's no alcohol use in this movie, it seems. Right?
Well, not in this particular film, but there's a lot of alcohol use in a lot of the Wheeler and Woolsey films.
Oh, okay. I was just kind of curious with this particular one. There was none.
From what their 1931 film, Quat Plastered, is actually built around the idea... back in the 30s, you were able to get sodas and ice cream at pharmacies. And the whole idea around Quat Plastered, and something you couldn't do after the code came in, is the idea that someone is spiking the soda.
Sure. All right, here's the rest of that scene. I just wanted to play some of the music. The music is really halfway decent. Sometimes it's halfway decent, and then in other times, like that piece, it's very high quality, and the dancing is very good. Again, a few dollars were spent on this movie. There's no doubt about it.
Yes.
But did it do well? I'm still not clear as to whether the amount of money that it made was fair for the amount it should have made.
Well, and I'm going to, this is a Gino's controversy time, because their next film, Cockeyed Cavaliers, which most people consider to be their best film, I'm not particularly a fan of it. I covered it on my own program, the Cult Movie Podcast,
right.
And I'm not the biggest fan of that film. A lot of Wheeler and Woolsey film fans would probably attack me for that, but it's just not one of my favorites. I consider Hips, Hipsteray to be their really good, last really good film. The reason for that is because after Hips, Hipsteray, the code started coming in. And as soon as the code came in, that was pretty much the death knell for the team. Gone were the double entendres. Gone were the sexy girls. Gone were smoking and drinking. It's quite interesting to note that in their last film, High Flyers, there was supposed to be a scene in which Wheeler and Woolsey are snorting cocaine, but they weren't allowed to say cocaine.
Wow.
And their films continue to, sadly, as soon as the code came in, their films started losing money, and gradually they started, you know, just teetering off until the end of the abrupt end of the team. And and I think it's tempting to speculate if Woolsey had lived, would their contract had gone on for a couple more films? I sadly don't think it would have, given that their films continually lost money by that point. But with that said, even a lesser Wheeler and Woolsey film is still, you know, head and shoulders above a lot of comedies that are coming out today. I mean, sure. That's just my opinion.
So here's the race. It's a little bit of a short clip I'm going to play. Here you go. Whoa. And right there, you're going to hear Woolsey do this signature, whoa, over and over again. And it really has grown on me.
Come up here. Come on up here.
Move if you do wear something.
What am I gonna do?
What do you mean, do?
I got a hiccup.
Hold your breath. Hold your breath.
I can't. You'd better scare me.
Boo!
That didn't scare me.
In a very, it's like a cartoon that you're watching. You know, nobody ever gets really hurt. The car is literally doing flips in the air. It was crazy.
Yeah, and the reason for the race is because there's a race to see which, because there's a subplot involving this villainous character who is working for the Made in America cosmetic firm. And he's actually a spy for another firm, he's trying to ruin Made in America. That is M-A-I-D-E-N America.
Right.
Nice play of words there. So all throughout the film, Wheeler and Woolsey are trying to evade his spies, the cops, and trying to win this race. And so... that's why they're trying so hard to get back on track, is because Made in America is going to be going bankrupt if they don't win that race.
I see. So, yeah, all in all, my final thought with this is, you know, I will definitely revisit, or rather visit, Wheeler and Woolsey films. There's no doubt about it. I'm not really sure if I'm going to fall in love with them the way that I fell in love with Marx Brothers, but I will definitely bring them up to you, and if we get into a conversation enough about it, maybe, you know, we'll bring it back to VHS Rewind. There's just so many other movies to review, and
yes, and you were asking me earlier, I don't know if you still wanted me to answer the question of how I discovered them.
Sure.
Okay, how I discovered Wheeler and Woolsey was quite a funny story, and I wrote about it on a blog article that I submitted to the website Someday Productions Pillow Talking, so I highly insist you guys checking that article out. I'll send it to Mark, he put it in the show notes. And how I got involved with them, well, I was a big fan of the Marx Brothers, like yourself, and my father had died when I was six, and I needed an escape, and so the Marx Brothers provided that escape. So I started watching their films and everything, and there was this library book sale that I used to frequent, and there would be like the odd VHS or the odd DVD, and I would always find something related to the Marx Brothers or Disney, and I would always pick it up. One of the books there was The Art Chaos Story, And I loved the cover of the book, and it had one of my favorite film characters on it as well, King Kong, because I'd also gotten into King Kong. So I bought it immediately just on the merits that King Kong was in this book. And so I took it home, and as I was flipping through the pages between 1929 and 1937, I started seeing pictures of this comedy team, Wheeler and Woolsey, and it's like, I've never heard of these guys. These guys look funny and outrageous, sure. And I wanted to check their films out. Now, at the time, their films weren't really that readily available. Some of their films had been released on VHS. A lot of their films had been released on Laserdisc, if you remember that format.
Sure.
I think the people who listen to the show would.
Yeah, I have a large collection, actually.
And other ways that you could have gotten your films was through bootleggers, catalogers, just in the mail, basically. So the films were really the easiest to track down. So how I wound up getting their films in the first place was I was on a reward system in high school. And if I did well, I would be able to buy the odd DVD. So the first three Wheeler and Woolsey films I ever had in my collection, and I still have them, are a Digiview DVD of Hook, Line, and Sinker from 1930. The print was horrible. It was a CNC television print that looked like it had been played underwater. That's how horrible.
No.
And the audio was wretched. But from what I saw, I fell in love with it. And I also, at that same time, bought the Alpha video DVD of Half Shot at Sunrise, which was a pretty good print, all things considered, being an Alpha product. Most of their product, at least at that time, wasn't really considered great quality. And the last DVD that I had was actually a DVD-R from the now-defunct Nostalgia Family Video of their film called Plastered. I immediately loved that film because they had a great opening sequence, animated sequence of a train. And no other film I'm aware of did that at that time. It's time to speculate the Van Buren company who made animated films for RKO. I believe they are the ones who were responsible for that. So that's how I got introduced to them, those three DVDs, and I just fell in love with their work. And they sort of went on the back burner for a little while because, at that time, their films aren't easy to find. So I was just waiting for these other films to be released. And my prayers were answered, and millions of Wheeler and Woolsey fans and classic comedy fans' prayers were answered when Warner Archive finally released Diplomaniacs on single DVD, Girl Crazy and Peachorino on double DVD. And it's interesting because Girl Crazy hadn't been released since the late 40s.
Oh, wow.
Because MGM bought the rights to make the Judy Garland Mickey Rooney film. And then they came out the Marvelous Nine film collection, and just recently they finished the catalog with the sixth film, Wheeler and Woolsey RKO Comedy Classics Collection Volume 2, which I highly recommend.
That's great, though. That's, you know, it's very similar to the way I've discovered a lot of things that that I can't believe I overlooked. You know, this is a good example of something I easily overlooked, and I'm really glad that I... you know, that you turn me on to, and hopefully I'll just continue checking it out, man. I want to thank you, Gino Cuddy, for coming on to VHS Rewind for this throwback episode, nearly 100-year-old episode. It's about, 80 years old? And where would people go to learn more about you and what you do?
They can visit my Facebook page, my official public Facebook page, which is facebook.com/officialGinoCuddy. That is GenoCudd as in David Y. There I post like funny quotes. I post news, goings on, events.
And you can always find Gino in the VHS Rewind Facebook group as well. Do you have... I know that you're working on a lot of different things. You have your own show, your own TV show, that I think people can find episodes of on YouTube.
Correct.
What is the exact title of that?
The exact title of that would be Gino in the Evening. And for those of you who live in the Middletown, Middlesex County, Connecticut area, I do go live every first Monday of the month. At 7 p.m. On Comcast Channel 15, and the following counties get that channel. Middletown, Middlefield, Cromwell, Portland, and East Hampton, Connecticut. Nice. It's a very fun program, and I have just recently started to live stream them on Facebook. So if you can't catch them locally when they're live, you could catch them on Facebook live streaming when they're live. And I also put a clean quality copy on YouTube later on.
So he says it's the first Monday of the month?
Correct.
So we just missed it.
Well, the thing is, I didn't do a show this month because...
What?
There's a lot getting in the way, but next month I will be coming to you with a wonderful special documenting the life of one of my heroes and somebody you actually introduced me to, the late great British comedian Tommy Cooper.
Yes. The guy with the funny hat who died on stage.
Yeah, Rick Fez.
But all right, Gino, thank you so much again, and I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this with me.
Thank you, and I appreciate being on, and hopefully we could have more adventures in the future, and it's been great.
Yeah, sounds good. Talk to you next time.